I am now speaking to an absolute South African mountain biking legend, and not so much for his achievements on a bicycle, but rather for his achievements to conceptualize and develop the largest mountain bike stage race in the world, the Sani 2C. And I'm of course speaking to Farmer Glenn Hoare, the father of this iconic event. Farmer Glenn, welcome to the show. The first Sani 2C was held in 2005. With around 600 riders, and this year the event attracted more than 4,200 riders from all corners of the world. Did you ever expect this race to become so big?
No, Rick. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on your show. You know, it was started for a reason. It was started before stage races in this country. Basically, we used to run a stage race called the Mono Wild Ride, and that hoodwinked us into starting a stage race for a little private school here in the community that I live in. I never in my wildest dreams did I think it was going to turn into the biggest race of its kind in the world.
South Africa is also the country in the world with the most number of mountain bike stage races. I believe there are nearly 60 of these multi-staged events. Farmer Glenn, why did the Sani 2C become so popular?
Yeah, I think, we ride a lot ourselves, so we understand exactly what the market wanted. And it was started for a real reason, to raise money for the school. So we had a real need and in the community for a private school. Yeah, the community really got stuck in. I think we were fortunate that we were in early. So we got a bit of a head start and we got the numbers and we were able to do things that maybe other events that started later aren't able to afford to do because they just don't get the numbers. Yeah, so we focused always, the route is king. So first and foremost, we understand that mountain bikers come to ride a great route, and we feel that over the years we've been able to develop that. So it's a point-to-point event going through so many different terrain types and vegetation types. So it's always interesting,
Let's talk about the route. It starts on your farm near Himville in KwaZulu-Natal, and then it takes riders on a 260-kilometer snaking route through the southern Drakensberg into the Umkomaas Valley all the way through to Scottsboro on the KZN South Coast. Now, most of this trail is custom-built for mountain biking and has some spectacular views, and this is one of the key reasons why so many riders participate.
Yes, exactly. We'll never lose sight of the fact that, first and foremost, it's all about the route, and then, other things are important after that, But, if the route's not good, you won't get the rider talking about it and you won't get them coming back. So we understand fully what's needed to make a good route. Our whole family rides flat out. We've been involved with mountain biking before it was even mountain biking. So I think we compete in a lot of other different events. We're always riding and, we can judge what the market wants, I think, before most people do. So, yeah, we pride ourselves of being innovative. We've done a whole lot of things that other events have copied. So, we feel we're sort of on the cutting edge of events. And, it's a numbers game as well. So that helps us with running three events. Those help to cover the costs of the route and the race villages and, bridges that we put up and be able to pay communities properly because of the numbers. So people at a water table then get paid for 4,200 people, not just for 150. So it does make life a lot easier for us and motivates all the communities. It's a real community-based event. So these aren't professional people that offer all the services to the event. So it's important that we keep them well paid and happy, and they do a great job.
Glenn, the race is a massive logistical challenge. You have three different events being hosted over a period of 5 days in which 4,200 cyclists participate. What are the logistics behind it? How many people actually work to put this whole event together?
Yeah, the logistics are massive. And because people aren't employed by the event themselves, they work for their community organization and we pay that organization. So they're pretty much volunteers for the organization, whether it be a school or a church group or some essential organization within a community. What a community needs, really to keep functioning and attracting people to work there and to stay in the area and raise their kids, So I've never really understood or had been to grips of exactly how many people there are, but I imagine at any one time in any race village during the running of the event, there are probably close to 500 people that are actually working, you know, preparing meals, washing bikes, making sure the tents are serviced, the ablutions are run properly. We've got electricians full-time. We have a whole team of medics and doctors in each race village. You know, we've got mechanics and masseurs. So I think at any one time, we've probably got at least 500 people in the race village, you know, but the preparation before that is also massive. So I'd hate to know exactly how many people are involved. You know, you might get an old age home that are shuttling vehicles from the start in Humble down to the school in Underberg and down in Scottsdale, you know. So that alone, I mean, I know one school did over 400 vehicles this year, so they needed 400 people to drive those cars. You know, they get paid well for doing that, and it's a big job. You know, it's a long drive. It's probably a good 3-hour drive, and a round trip is a good day of out of their normal day, you know, but they're happy to offer that for whatever organization. Mostly schools, yeah, our focus is on schools. So it's massive. I mean, during the event, we have Supergroup sponsor us vehicles. So they partner with us logistically. And I mean, they have over 30 vehicles at the actual event, you know, 8-ton high volume trucks just to move competitor kit, you know. So it's just the competitors' bags and clothing they need to move from one event to the next. So that on its own, coordinating that is massive. I mean, Clovis supplies with trucks for water trucks for the seconding tables. I mean, at any one time, they've got over 10 vehicles out on the route, you know, when all three events are running, which is the Thursday of that race week. You know, there'll be 10 vehicles around. You know, we've got three helicopters always out on the route, you know, and a medical helicopter to make sure that we can get advanced life support to riders. And, you know, so logistically, it's massive. We have people at the hospitals, at the various hospitals, you know, because the rider might be brought in and, you know, in his cycling gear, and he's literally got to get admitted to hospital, and he's got nothing, you know. And from where he's come to the hospital, is it often 3-hour ambulance trip, you know. So we've got people in at the various hospitals making sure that they've got toothbrushes and pajamas, and their next of kin have been spoken to, and they've been looked after, and we find accommodation for the wife if she decides she needs to come down and be with her husband if he's landed himself in hospital. So it's a massive logistical task, but it's because we've used same service providers literally from day one. Everyone knows their game. Everyone knows what they need to do. Everyone each year improves a little bit, and you know that's all they have to do is just up their game slightly each year, and that combined effort makes a huge difference to the overall experience of the riders. And you know that's what we basically here for.
But the race is not all about mountain biking. You also do a lot of development work in the communities along the route, and you see a lot of investment into infrastructure and other services within these communities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was started for, as I mentioned at the start of the show, it was started for a real reason. And if you go to read our mission statement, it's basically to improve the lives of the people in the community, you know, and first and foremost is education, we feel, and to have good schools, and we support schools fully, and thereafter we'll support all the other worthy organizations, you know. But yeah, we focus on schools. This past year, for the services that were provided for the event paid out over 10 million rand to various organizations. No individuals get paid for doing stuff. They work for an organization, and an organization gets paid. They need to pay someone individually for traveling, or he's done a lot of work and he needs to get compensated. Then that organization does that. So we chat to different organizations, and we set up some sort of partnership with them, and we agree to pay them a certain amount, and then they carry on and do the job, you know. So it's huge, you know. I don't know of many events that put that sort of money back into community, you know. So 10 million rand this last year, over 10 million was put back. Yeah, and then more than that, there's a whole lot of other spin-offs, you know. There's a lot of DMVs and accommodation for supporters and spectators and family that will stay. I mean, they fully sold out. And so the injection into the community is huge, and it's really valued. And I think that's why the community really pull out all the stops, you know, because they realize that this event means a whole lot for their school or their organization.
And the area must benefit tremendously. If you look at, say, I think the entry fee is around 15,000 rand for a team, which consists of two people. With 4,200 riders, you're looking at around 30 million just in the entry fees, and then the additional costs, accommodation and food and drink and that type of thing. And then that must stimulate that whole area and can be seen as a cash injection into the area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll try and get all our help from the area firstly. So we would be lucky to go and order medals from some big corporate. No, we'd rather get some organization in the community to actually make the medal. So right down to the last mile, the route is built by people that live adjacent to the route, you know. So we that's a huge cost for us. It's not a route that can be ridden every week like a lot of the other events will utilize existing trails. Our trail, over 300 kilometers of it, is purely used for the event, you know. It's closed for the rest of the year. So that in its own, just keeping that busy, we use a lot of people to keep that in the condition that it is. And then it's literally blown each night before the riders come. So that's our sort of standard, and we'll stick to that. Yeah, so we also have race villages, you know. A lot of events are sort of cloverleaf-based, and a race village is a huge expense to the event, you know. So we've got three different venues that we've developed over the years. I mean, one venue, you know, has got at least 70 showers and over 120 toilets, and those are fully tiled, and, you know, so the standard is really high. I mean, we've bought properties and erected permanent buildings on them. I mean, at Jollybird, which is the last overnight stop, the structure there is 36 meters wide and 100 meters long. You know, it can seat 3,000 people, and that's really purely for the event, and we've had to do that sort of thing just because of the logistics around it, you know, setting up temporary marquees and electrical and the safety standards and kitchens and cold rooms and, you know, cooking facilities is near impossible to cater for 4,500 people, you know, with the crew and the media and that. We're probably catering for over 5,000 people over the 3 days, you know, and that, to do that in a temporary setup for 3 days of the year is very difficult. So we've gone permanent. We've stuck our necks out and invested a lot of money into property and to building a race village. But part of that has been to create opportunity, you know, and that's what we're about. We've got teams of tilers and plumbers and builders and bricklayers and, you know, that work in all the race villages year-round now. So we've created opportunity for them. Some of the people that we've upskilled are running their own business. The tiler, for instance, I mean, Musa is a guy that we upskilled together with Tile Africa, one of our partners, and you know, he's running his own business now, and we've got to book him. So if we've got a project that we want to do, I've got to book him long in advance because he's running a successful business, a tiling business, and you know, that's what it's about. If we can create employment for people and create opportunities, that's part of what the event's doing. It's not all about the ride, and you know, our hashtag is that it's not just about the ride. Basically, it's it's about everything else that goes on around the ride as well.
And you also own a big dairy farm with more than 2,000 cows. So who are you? Are you a dairy farmer who organizes a little mountain bike stage race on the side? Or are you an organizer of this big mountain bike stage race with a little dairy farm on the side?
No, I mean, as you speak to me now, I'm doing the last burning of the fire season. So we're busy burning some brushwood and we've got a bit of forestry as well, but we're more predominantly we dairy farmers. I'm third generation. My son's back on the farm now, so he's fourth generation. So my first love is obviously farming. And, you know, our kids needed to go to a school in the area, and there wasn't one that was any good at all. So we decided that we needed to do something about it, and we started the school called Linford Primary School in the Kata area. And, you know, its success has been due to Sani, really. And, you know, I plan to live here for the rest of my life. I see my kids and my grandchildren farm here too, you know. So it's a long haul. It's not just a short-term opportunity that we saw that there was a market to make some money out of event organizing. So first and foremost, I'm a farmer and who just loves mountain biking and loves supporting communities. And, yeah, so my passion really is farming, but, you know, when it's sunny season and it's time to organize the mountain bike race, then, you know, the farm plays second fiddle. Fortunately, my son's here now, so he keeps the thing on the straight and narrow while I'm away. But, running 2,000 cows is a big job, but it's part of our life, and it's part of in our blood, and it's what we love doing. So primarily I'm a dairy farmer, and who does organizing mountain bike events and riding mountain bikes. You know, I've done pretty much every major race in the country, and a few times I paddle and canoe. So life's busy, but it's all good.
Thank you, Farmer Glenn. You have established a wonderful event which allows mountain bikers from all over South Africa and the world to come and visit and see our beautiful country, and especially the spectacular route you have developed in the southern Drakensberg. And also thank you for the wonderful development work you are doing in the area.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. Thanks. It's been an honor to be on your show, and good luck into the future. We're privileged to be able to be in this position to do what we do. So that's my honor.
Thank you, Farmer. That was Farmer Glenn Hoare. He is the father of the iconic Sani 2C mountain bike race.